this puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Break it down, sister, break it down. It's time for Abandoned Manitoba with our very own history enthusiast, Gordon Goldsborough, who has been on a journey this past week. Gordon, welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, where have you been?
Well, I had the opportunity to visit a place that I've wanted for years to get to, and that's the abandoned fur trade post at the mouth of the Hayes River on Hudson Bay.
And how was it?
Fabulous. Absolutely great. I mean, I'm already making plans to go back.
Perfect. All right. So now remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, I said that we were going to visit a very important factory here in Manitoba where there has never been any machines. And I think the rationale there is that people often, when they hear the word factory, they think of a place with big machines that make stuff.
Of course.
But if you think about it a minute, if, for example, listeners recall, several weeks ago we talked about the St. Peter Dynevor Rectory along the Red River, and that was the home of the rector, the cleric who is in charge of the church. Well, a rectory is the home of a rector, and in the same context, a factory is the home of a factor.
Gordon Goldsborough, so sneaky. You look so innocent.
Well,
and
you're probably wondering, though, what a factor is.
That was my next question,
yes,
actually.
Yes, of course. Well, a factor was the name given during the fur trade to the manager of one of these fur trade posts. So the fur trade post would be managed by a factor, and therefore it would be a factory.
What got you interested in this particular site?
I think anyone who is a student of the fur trade knows that this is perhaps the most significant building in all of the fur trade of Western Canada. In fact, it goes back to 1684. I mean, that's long before there was a Canada. Now, not at the site we were talking about today. It was what they called York Factory Number 1 in 1684. It was near the mouth of the Hayes River, as is the site we're talking about today. But a theme that we'll come back to a little later is that the original York factory was threatened by erosion. The site that it occupied was a poor one, and they eventually had to move to another site that they called York Factory Number 2, and then to the third site, York Factory Number 3. And York Factory Number 3 started in 1788. So just think about it. That's just shortly after the United States became a nation. Long before Canada became a nation, there is this fur trade post in the area that would become Manitoba. So that's why I think it's significant. Now, the building we're talking about, and there is an abandonment element to this story, we're talking about a fur trade building called the Depot.
Okay.
And essentially what it was a big warehouse for both the trade goods that would be brought over from England by ship, would be unloaded from the ships, brought up into this building and stored, and then would eventually be sent off all over the prairies. You know, all of the fur trade posts all over Western Canada were supplied from this warehouse. And then conversely, when all of these fur trade posts were sending their furs out to be taken back to Europe to be made into various goods, well, they too were stored here in these warehouses. So this was essentially the place where all of the action took place, both the materials coming into North America and the materials leaving North America. And that's why I would argue this is easily one of the most important sites in the fur trade, is this York factory.
But was it that easy to get to?
Well, even today, it's not an easy place to get to. And by standards of the day, back in the 1600s, 1700s, it was quite a remote place. You know, you would have to paddle days, weeks, months to get there. In fact, that's one of the things that really struck me when we went on our tour the other day. That we went by jet boat. We actually drove up to Gillam and actually met a fellow just downstream of the limestone generating station, because, of course, there's a big hydro dam on the river now, so you just can't drive your boat all the way down the river the way they used to be able to do back in the days of the fur trade. And we got in the jet boat, and even from there, it was still a 100-mile trip. By this boat. I mean, and so it took a while. Now, in this particular case, it was a jet boat. It went very fast. So the trip took a mere 3.5 hours. But I remember the whole time I was going along on this boat thinking, you know, how easy do I have it compared to those generations of fur traders, those hardy fellows that would paddle for weeks and months to get here? You know, by comparison, my 3.5 hours is nothing.
So true.
Mm-hmm. And when we got there, I was really struck by just what a magnificent building it is. It was built between 1831 and 1838, and that means that the building is about 180 years old. That too is significant, because you think that building is older than Manitoba.
What condition is it in?
Well, actually in pretty good shape. It is now a National Historic Site. It's managed by Parks Canada, and they do what they can to preserve it. They're only there 2 months of the year, July and August. So there's only so much they can do to maintain it. They did tell us when we were there they're going to be having a crew coming in to do some restoration of it. But considering its age and considering that they can't do everything that we would like to do on it, it's still in pretty decent shape. Just to give you a sort of a mental picture of what it looks like, it's a large, square, mostly two-story building. I say mostly because there actually is one part of it that's three stories. And in fact, on top of the third story, there's actually a little wee little lookout. So you can look out over Hudson Bay and see those ships that would be coming, or those squadrons of canoes that would be coming. But mostly two stories. It's huge. It's 16,000 square feet in area. I mean, so that's a big building by modern standards. But when you think about it, It's so big a building that if you had the entire building closed in, it would be exceptionally dark inside. And of course, this is long before there was electricity. You would have candles perhaps for light, and that would be a rather dangerous proposition to walk around in a building full of furs or with trade goods to have this open flame. So what they did is actually they had a courtyard in the middle. If you look at it from above, think of almost like a square donut. And the hole in the donut is this courtyard. And the purpose for it is to allow sunlight to come in the courtyard. And then they have windows on the inside of the courtyard. So you get sunlight from the outer windows and from the inner windows. And that's really the only way they could have light inside this building.
Interesting.
Yeah, fascinating. And you walk through, I met one of the people in my tour noted that a lot of old buildings, you walk and the floor kind of creaks, because it's getting old. This one is absolutely solid, no creaking whatsoever. It was a solid building, considering that anytime you make a claim about something being the biggest, the smallest, the largest, whatever, you're always prone to being challenged. But I'm going to make a claim that this building may be the oldest wooden building that survives in Manitoba. Now, maybe some of our listeners will be able to challenge me, and I'd love to hear from them if they can. But I'm going to say this is the oldest wooden building surviving in Manitoba, 180 years old and still in remarkably good condition. The place is really kind of interesting from another standpoint, too. When you get there, you have to walk on boardwalks. Everywhere you go, there are boards laid down on the ground, and you walk on those boards.
Why is that?
Well, my first thought was, well, maybe it's because they don't want us walking on the grass for some reason. Well, I suppose you might not want to walk on the grass because the whole area is quite peaty. In fact, if you do step off these boardwalks, your foot kind of sort of sinks into the ground.
Okay.
Because the whole area is covered in a layer of peat on the ground. And so these boardwalks were made for, when you were carrying a big bundle of furs on your back, you wouldn't want to sink into the ground with a bundle of furs. So you actually had these boardwalks. So everywhere you look, there are these boardwalks everywhere. And I remember I came across a reference by one of the early residents at York Factory that noted that here's a direct quote from his diary. When he took leave of Fort York, its fog and bogs and mosquitoes, he left with little regret. And we didn't encounter any of the fogs when we were there, but we certainly encountered those bogs everywhere. And mosquitoes, well, there were a few. Not as bad as I've encountered in some of my past visits to northern Manitoba, but certainly there were quite a number of mosquitoes and black flies that all wanted a little bit of me. So that was something that maybe, if they were worse, it might not make it a very pleasant place.
But. So what happened to the York Factory then?
Well, as you can imagine, the fur trade itself was declining through the 20th century, particularly the use as a depot, because more and more of the supplies that would supply the fur trade were coming by way of things like trains in southern Manitoba. So it wasn't quite as necessary to bring ships into Hudson Bay. So it was simply the declining revenue from the fur trade, the declining activity of the fur trade, with simply the more efficient trade routes of the south. So that finally the Hudson's Bay Company that operated the York Factory closed it in 1957. And in 1968, they gifted it to the Government of Canada. I mean, they recognized, of course, how important a site this was historically. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a property of the Government of Canada ever since. And say it's a National Historic Site. It's managed and during the summertime and, say, maintained as much as they possibly can.
Now, how safe is it given that it's so close to the the banks of the river.
And especially since its two predecessors both fell victim to erosion of the shoreline. That is, in fact, the single biggest threat to York Factory. I don't know in what time frame it's going to happen. Probably not in my lifetime, but certainly within the lifetime perhaps of some of our younger listeners, that the depot building, this magnificent 180-year-old building, may actually fall into the Hayes River. Because if you look at some of the old photos, you go back long enough, they had large gardens on the lake, on the riverside of the depot. And beyond the gardens, there was a whole area where indigenous people who came to the post to trade, they would camp. Well, that whole encampment area is gone. Because of bank erosion. In some places, apparently, the erosion is as much as 1 meter, 3 feet of bank is lost in a year. You know, and so you think about it, in 10 years, that's a lot. In 50 years, that's even more. So, say, the erosion is considerable. And Parks Canada is certainly aware of it. They are trying to do the best they can. But, of course, it is a fairly costly undertaking to try to stabilize that bank, especially because you really are working against Mother Nature. You know, it's simply the result of wave action.
Yeah.
It's the result of ice shifting around. The whole area is underlain by sort of unstable permafrost, and if that melts, especially in the context of global warming, if you get some of that permafrost melting, it destabilizes it further. So I don't know that there's an awful lot of hope for the long term. This depot building may inevitably fall into the river.
And there's no York Factory number 4 to back it up.
Not likely.
Okay, no. Gordon, what's the hint for next week?
Well, next week we're going to visit another site in northern Manitoba that I stopped at during my travels, and it's a site near the mighty Nelson River. That has in its name two acronyms. The acronyms are RCAF and MCL.
Sounds like a crossword puzzle. Thank you, Gordon. We'll see you next week.
You're welcome, Nedja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.